Do we want humans to remain what they are now? Or do we want them to become something so much better than themselves that it's difficult to continue to call them human? Should the human race survive? Should it endure? Do we want humanity to continue? This is a question that Ross Douthit recently asked Peter Thiel in a New York Times interview. And what was interesting was Peter Thiel's hesitation in responding. You might think it's self-evident that, of course, you would want humanity to remain. And you might also think that it's obviously evil if somebody says, no, I do not want humanity to remain. And so Peter Thiel paused, hesitated, considered the question. And it's actually quite interesting if you see the transcript, which I put on screen of this part of the exchange. You see, Douthit asks, I think you would prefer the human race to endure. Thiel says, Douthit, you're hesitating. Thiel, well, I don't know. I would. This is a long hesitation, Douthit says. Thiel says, there's so many questions implicit in this. You know, finally, he replies that the human race should survive, but I think it's worth paying attention to why he hesitated. And really, here's the issue. So I want you to think about humanity as you know it, and transhumanism as you might imagine it. So not the fully elaborated political theory or philosophy of transhumanism, not its ideology and worldview, but just at a simple sort of level. So let's take the following view. You broke your leg and you need crutches. You go to the hospital, you get crutches. Now you're walking as your leg heals, you don't need the crutches, off you go. Now we ask the question, are crutches a transhuman technology? No, not really, right? They correct a natural defect, the damaged leg, and they do so to allow you to function normally. Okay, what about, you know, some sort of surgery? Because crutches is just like an external implement that you use for a minute while you are, you know, I said sore leg or whatever the case is. Okay, you broke my wrist once, you get a cast. I'm sure you've all been there. Glasses. Are glasses a transhuman technology? No, because they just put my sight back to its natural functioning. Laser eye surgery. I know somebody who had it recently. Same sort of thing, right? He was practically blind in his eye. He got the laser eye surgery. Pretty miraculous technology. In his case, restored his vision. Call it 20/20. We wouldn't really think, I think, you ask yourselves and let me know in the comments, that those kinds of corrective procedures are transhumanist. But what about augmentation procedures? What if you can go beyond your natural state of strength and health and have something that is extra? Now, you may have heard, I think it was Peter Thiel, among others, who invested in a kind of Olympic Games where drug use is not only permitted but encouraged, because they want to see what's the most that a human being can accomplish with augmentation, enhancement. So now you say, okay, is that transhuman forms of augmentation and enhancement? Is that just taking the human and really making him better? Like, you know, you used to live, you sometimes hear this, right? Life expectancy was 30 years, 40 years, 50 years. Now it's what, 70 years, 80 years in the United States. I don't know exactly what let's call it, somewhere between 70 and 80. Was that transhuman to double the life expectancy? Women died in childbirth, now they don't. Is that transhuman? So you might think, okay, fine. We're just trying to give you a good, healthy, natural life. And in order to do that, there are all kinds of diseases that we have to protect against, and there are all kinds of limitations that we have to try to guard against and caution against. So at what point are you so interested in developing human potential, human augmentation, human enhancement, that it seems like you've crossed some sort of threshold? Now, what exactly is that threshold is hard to say, but some sort of threshold. And now you have a different kind of humanity, a super humanity, an evolved humanity. Joe Allen has a book called Dark Eon. One of the students in my school recently wrote a long review of it. I'll put the link in the description in case you want to see it. Dark Eon is a study of transhumanism. And I think it's from him, at least in my experience, it's from him, that you have this word legacy humans. legacy humans, the old version of humanity that did not go, you know, sort of you had a fork in the road. You had those humans who became augmented and enhanced, those humans who stayed what? Stayed human. They stayed legacy human. So I think that Peter Thiel's hesitation around the nature of the human race remaining has to do with this question, because do we want humans to remain what they are now? Or do we want them to become something so much better than themselves that it's difficult to continue to call them human? Or at any rate, you know, they're going to be so unlike what we're used to that you think maybe the words don't quite fit. So look, let me give you another example. This is something that's happening now. In other words, the technology is happening now. And the extrapolation, the visionary extrapolation, that's not fully realized yet, but it's implicit in the promise and the possibility of this new technology. And that is Elon Musk's Neuralink. Now, I'm learning more about Neuralink. I don't claim to be an expert at all. But if you've heard anything about it, you know that, for instance, it helps somebody who has no control of their body. Otherwise, let's say they can't use their arms, but they can use their mind once it's been implanted with Neuralink, or their brain, let's say, maybe to be more precise. Is it more precise or less precise to talk about the brain here? Well, at any rate, they're able to just think and control a game of chess or whatever it happens to be, okay? Mario Kart or something like that. They can play video games with their mind, not with their fingers. That's pretty interesting. You know, they get some quality of life restored to them, and they get some dignity and ability restored to them through Neuralink. So in this case, it's like, look, we want to give you a crutch. We want you to be able to walk again. But how do you walk with no legs? You know, how do you control something with no arms? Well, we're going to bypass the arms and just let you do it straight from the brain. And so I wouldn't think right away that that is primarily transhuman, although you see, because here too, you have an implanted computer device that allows you to do something that is, let's call it, historically unprecedented. And that seems qualitatively different in some way from a crutch. But okay, nevertheless, right? It's not like you're taking an extremely healthy, well-functioning athlete, Djokovic, Novak, the tennis player, okay, LeBron James, whoever, pick your model of the functioning athlete and saying, let's juice it up even more and see what we can squeeze out of this specimen. No, it's like I said, taking people who are in a rough state. But Elon Musk has also said that the aspiration for the Neuralink program is to make sure that humanity is not left in the dust when faced with the growth of superintelligence through AI and computing. And what's the connection? The connection is very simple. If you don't want humanity to be left in the dust in comparison with these supercomputers and their superintelligence, you need to augment our bandwidth, our capacity, and then we have some chance of keeping up. That's very different from saying, I'm going to help somebody who's a paraplegic play Tetris with his mind. Now it's like, no, unless we do the Neuralink project of enhancing and augmenting legacy humans so that they become something unprecedented, they're going to be a relic in comparison to the superintelligences. So it's, you know, it's not so easy. It's not so straightforward. But this desire within humanity to overcome limitations, though that's an old story. And in fact, I can do a much longer video on this topic. I'm going to keep this one relatively short, okay? Separately, we'll do a long deep dive into the political philosophy of the technological conquest of nature. Okay, but right now, I just want you to think about it this way. Humanity tries to overcome limitations. And one of the limitations is the limitation of our own biology. And isn't it the case that there's something human in the transhuman impulse? There's something distinctly human about wanting to overcome the limits that make us human. Now, in antiquity, maybe you'd think this is hubris. This is man trying to become like a god. And the Greek myths and the Bible stories, they tell us, don't do that because that's not going to end well. But again, I ask you, where does technology begin and end in relationship to this project of man's self-overcoming? Is it with the crutch? Is it with the corrective lenses? Is it with the eye surgery? Is it with Neuralink? And why? Just because Neuralink happens to be inserted in an important part of our anatomy. So what about heart surgery? What about a heart transplant? What about other things that affect how you think and how you feel and who you believe you are and what you believe you can do? Shouldn't soldiers who have lost limbs in war have replacement limbs? And don't those limbs have certain features that you could even consider? Maybe this is already the case, or maybe we can just imagine it, you know, that have certain, for example, you have a stronger bionic arm than you do a physical arm, okay? Or you have an exoskeleton, you have something here. So it's actually not self-evident. You know, if you think that freedom over nature is a key feature of what it is to be human, then you could think that freedom from our biological nature is the peak expression of that. It's strange, okay? It's strange. But it's why I think Peter Thiel hesitated in his New York Times interview answer when he couldn't say right away, without bringing up some of the nuances and complexities, whether he would prefer the human race to endure. And very quickly here, I'll just put up on screen for you a continuation, which, by the way, you should read the interview, or I think there's a video version, watch the interview. And, you know, you never really know everything you need to know about a thinker from, you know, a quick exchange, 4 or 5 lines, or even 5, 10 minutes. So Peter Thiel in particular, you know, if you're interested in what he thinks, you should read his books and you should listen to his other interviews. I've done several readings of Thiel's work on this channel, so not trying to reduce anything or cut corners here, but I just want to give you a little part of the continuation of the interview so that you get a sense of kind of what Thiel was thinking and where his mind was in part. So he says, I would like us to radically solve these problems. And, you know, you get a little bit more context of the problems that he means when you read the interview proper. But he says, it's always, I don't know, yeah, transhumanism. So here he brings up transhumanism. He says, the ideal was this radical transformation where your human natural body gets transformed into an immortal body. Okay, so let me just pause here, right? Clearly getting crutches does not make you immortal. Eyeglasses do not make you immortal. Neuralink. Okay, Elon Musk says it's going to restore sight to the blind. That's miraculous. Allows people to play Tetris without their hands. That's pretty miraculous. I don't know that it has the aspiration to make people immortal or to have an immortal body. So for Thiel, built into the promise of transhumanism is this radical transformation where your human natural body gets transformed into an immortal body. And he says, continuing, there's a critique of, let's say, the trans people in a sexual context. In other words, you know, men who want to become women, women who want to become men. A transvestite is someone who changes their clothes and cross-dresses. Okay, you guys know that, yeah? A transsexual is someone where you change your, I don't know, penis into a vagina, he says. And we can debate how well those surgeries work. So you guys know we just, you know, just exited an era. It still is with us, but to a lesser extent than it was before Trump's win. An era where this was all the rage, trans ideology, okay? This transformation. But look what he says. We, I guess, like, you know, we the transhumanists, or we those who aspire to evolve the human race into its next iteration, he says, we want more transformation than that, okay? Not just the transvestite who changes clothing, not just the transsexual who changes penis into a vagina, or vagina into a penis, something more. So what does he say? He want more transformation than that. The critique is not that it's weird and unnatural. Man, it's so pathetically little, he says. And okay, we want more than cross-dressing or changing your sex organs. We want you to be able to change your heart and change your mind and change your whole body. He mentions then Christianity. He says that the Christian critique of trans genderism and transvestitism is that they don't go far enough. And then he says of transhumanism too. Transhumanism is just changing your body, but you also need to transform your soul and your whole self. So these are weighty and heavy topics. Okay, you go from, hey, Peter Thiel, don't you want humanity to endure? And he pauses not because he dreams, I think, okay, obviously, I think there's a lot of evidence for what I'm about to say, but he doesn't dream of an apocalyptic holocaust of the human race in a nuclear catastrophe. No, no. In fact, you know, his whole organizing principle in his recent interviews has been apocalypse, an antichrist. Apocalypse we're trying to avoid. He does not want a radical apocalypse, okay? We're not interested in the physical annihilation of the human race through some sort of catastrophic nuclear holocaust. That's apocalypse, okay? Same with other versions of the end of humanity. That, you know, those are apocalyptic visions. But you also don't want the Antichrist. So it's the Antichrist for Peter Thiel. The Antichrist is something that presents itself as a solution to the apocalypse, but in doing so, it actually furthers nefarious purposes. It centralizes and universalizes a kind of evil impulse. It does so under a smiling face in the name of peace and security. And it's a one world totalitarian tyrannical state. So that's not good either, okay? But some people who are worried about the apocalypse, they may invoke as a solution to it policies that you can interpret as being policies of the Antichrist, so to speak. It's interesting, in the interview, Ross Douthat asks Peter Thiel whether or not, and for a lot of people, this was like a gotcha moment. I don't really believe in gotcha moments in that sense, but he says, hey, Mr. Peter Thiel, you're worried about the Antichrist coming along as a kind of solution to apocalyptic scenarios. Well, isn't that Palantir? You know, Palantir is this omnipresent spyware. Okay, again, this is not what Palantir is, and that's not exactly what Douthat said. Just giving you like an exaggerated version, right? But you know, you're in military technology, defense technology, surveillance technology, and you've got clients all over the world, and you're, you know, you're also interested in safety and deterrence and all this sort of thing. Like, maybe Palantir is the Antichrist. So, like I said, people who don't like Thiel and don't like Palantir, and they don't like related notions, for them, that was a little gotcha moment. But, you know, it is true that for Thiel, things that can present themselves as solution to a problem can also become the problem itself. A little bit of an aside, I'll try to keep this short, but there's a notion in political theology of the catechon. Okay, the catechon, I think, is from Thessalonians, one of Paul's epistles, and you can see it in the works of Carl Schmitt, Alexander Dugin, and Peter Thiel mentions it as well. So the idea of the catechon is the restrainer, the great restrainer, the restrainer of the coming of the Antichrist. And two things I want to say about it. Number one, Peter Thiel mentioned that sometimes the thing which acts as the restrainer of the Antichrist can itself invert and become Antichrist-like in itself. Okay, so he gives examples of this, but you might think like NATO was put into place or something like that in order to guard against the Soviet Union, to restrain the Soviet Union. When the Soviet Union collapsed and NATO did not, but preserved its own existence, its mission sort of transformed, its identity and ideals transformed. Again, this is like one of the examples that he gives in one of his lectures, if I'm not mistaken. And then suddenly, you know, you have like a unipolar American world, which seems like it's causing problems of its own. You know, this is kind of the neoconservative end of history view. And he's like, so there's something that at one stage was restraining an evil, at another stage itself becomes the evil. So, you know, you can see why someone would try to hoist him on his own petard. Or whatever they say about that. So that was pretty interesting. And then another thing about the catechon, I have to say here very briefly, those of you into Thielism, apocalypse, Antichrist, and the political theological way of interpreting world events may find this interesting. There's a little bit of a debate between Walter Benjamin, Carl Schmitt, and others about how to interpret the state in these terms. So for example, you may think that, like Carl Schmitt did, the state power is an important thing because the state power, the state is the catechon. It is what keeps the Antichrist at bay. So because the state is a catechon, because the state keeps dissolution and chaos and globalism and global liberalism or global socialism and all this other stuff at bay, it has a positive accent, positive emphasis. We're going to call it the catechon and give it this sort of political theological interpretation. But against Schmitt is the argument that, well, look, Christ only comes again when the Antichrist has come. So anything that is keeping the Antichrist at bay is also keeping Christ at bay. And therefore, what you want to do is you want to hasten the arrival of the Antichrist. You don't want to prevent or obstruct his arrival, because then you're kicking the can of the Messianic era down and down and down the road. So in fact, we should be anti-state, because we no longer want the Antichrist to be kept at bay. We need the coming of the devil, so to speak, in order to have the second coming of the Savior. So suddenly you have one notion, the notion of the catechon, applied to one phenomenon, the phenomenon of the state, and two radically different attitudes towards it. It shows you kind of the murkiness of the application of political theology, another point that Peter Thiel has talked about in some of his other lectures and discussions. So it's actually, as I say, this whole notion of technology and human nature, the relationship of technology to nature, technology as a certain form of distinctly human freedom over and above and against nature, how this relates to heaven, hell, God, and the devil, you wouldn't necessarily expect that you have to go there, and lo and behold, you do. All these questions arise from the simple little question, apparently, that Douthat asked, do you want to preserve the human race? Do you want humanity to survive? So think about that. Hopefully that's helpful. I hope that I have intrigued you to learning more about Peter Thiel, for sure, about Joe Allen and his book, Dark Eon. Like I said, I'll put a review, that comprehensive review that a student of mine wrote for it recently in the video description. You should know a little bit about some of the authors I mentioned if you want to go deeper into this: Carl Schmitt, Walter Benjamin, the topic of political theology. And for the benefit of the few of you for whom this will be really interesting, Leo Strauss and Heinrich Meyer's book about Leo Strauss and Carl Schmitt, where you have a contrast between political theology, which we've just been discussing a little bit, and political philosophy, which is a slightly different, though intimately related, inquiry into these types of problems. In my view, you need them both, and you need, for questions that are this difficult, you need all the tools that you can find to help you to think about them clearly. So, okay, guys, again, my name is Michael Millerman. Millermanschool.com is where I teach my courses. I have a lot of videos on this channel, so if you like this sort of thing, mixture of philosophy, political philosophy, and mysticism, you know, thinking about artificial intelligence, thinking about transhumanism, please subscribe, like, share, comment, do all that other great stuff, and see you in the next video.